What is the third explanation of the matzah, though?
The blessing itself?
What?
You want to skip the blessing itself.
Yeah. What is the third explanation of the matzah?
Of course, it's not the most obvious.
Obviously, we mention the matzah when we say, blessed be you who gave us, who makes us holy for your commandments and commanded us to eat the matzah. So we could say that's the third time. It's one of the times when we use matzah.
It's the Hillel sandwich.
I think so, yes. I think the Hillel sandwich is the next place where we clearly are saying this is what the matzah means. Right? So what does the matzah mean here? It's just before the Afikomen and Shulchan Aruch. So if you found those points in the Seder, and if you didn't, just ask someone next to you to help you find it, because no one should be bereft of knowing where we are.
51.
Yeah?
51?
So we're in this text, we're actually on the very last page, 47, because I left out the rest of the Haggadah in making these copies. And in the Maxwell Hill style Haggadah, what page are we on?
This Haggadah is 27.
27. Okay. Right. So that's the one that you two have also in front of you.
And our scroll is 51.
Yeah. Okay. So matzah and mara without a blessing, below baracha. There may be something very deep in that statement. Eating without blessing. What does that mean? But without getting too deep yet, because maybe we'll go back and figure that out. What is this? Zecher lamikdash. The simplest thing. Zecher lamikdash. Remembrance of the holy temple. The place that makes holy. Mikdash means the place that makes things holy. L'kayem mashin amar, to uphold the saying in the scripture, al matzot umerorim yochluhu, on matzah and maror, you will eat the Passover sacrifice. That's the lamb, remember, that you painted the doorpost with. Whose blood you painted the doorpost with, right? So, if you notice, for one thing, we've moved from being very much in the present. Now is here, now slaves. The next time we were more in the past, we were telling the story, this is what happened to our ancestors. And here, it's like way in the past. It's a remembrance, a memorialization of something in order to fulfill a verse, not because this is what the verse means, but in order to fulfill a verse which is even older that we're remembering. And so there's a kind of much larger distance of memory going on here, which I think is significant, although I'm not sure what it means. And the simple meaning of the matzah, though, is the time when the temple was standing. It represents the time when the temple was standing, when we could actually do the Passover sacrifice.
Well, why are you saying we're going further back?
We're going further in the way the remembrance is as though further back behind us, even though it's the most recent.
Right. Yeah, okay.
Concepts, right? So it represents the time when we were living on our land, and we had a temple, and we weren't in exile. But our redemption was never complete, right? Because if it was, we wouldn't have gone back into exile. And notice something else, of course, is that it memorializes what's missing, right? You eat the sandwich without the thing that's supposed to be in the middle of the sandwich, which is the lamb. Notice that it doesn't mention the word of the Pesach, right? It says, Al matzot memorim yochluhu, the pronoun that it's referring to, you should eat it, is the Pesach, but even the word Pesach is missing, not just the lamb, but the actual word itself is missing from here. So that's a different kind of memory. It's a kind of the memory of what's missing. And that's what I think that idea of reflecting on the Pesach, though, was very, very far past, and we're sort of memorializing it because we would forget otherwise almost. It's like, let's put up a plaque to remind ourselves. Is reflected also in this idea that that memory is the memory of what's missing. It's kind of it's a sad kind of remembering, right? Even though it should be joyful because it's remembering a time of redemption. But the immediacy from which joy emerges is actually much more in remembering the suffering and the slavery, and remembering it as though it were happening right now to you, not as though we were putting up a plaque to remind us this happened 3,000 years ago. In this place.
Maybe what it's reminding us of is that the redemption wasn't complete because we were exiled again.
Mm-hmm.
And we're exiled now.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is just Babylonian or Palestinian?
What's that?
Is this Babylonian or Palestinian?
Palestinian. This is before. Yeah.
What about yeah. We were exiled?
It's before what?
Yeah. It's before Babel was a, you know, producing Jewish.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, this is very early. This is a very early text.
How,
yeah.
In terms of years.
Hmm?
In terms of years, how early is it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what year?
This is pre-Talmudic, to some degree. Mishnei. Obviously, not
Mishnei.
What?
Mishnei.
In between Mishnei and Talmudic.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, not all parts of it. You can get actually something called the polychrome Haggadah,
yeah,
which has each different era's text in a different color. But which is an interesting thing to see. So, what's the last matzah moment?
Yeah. We eat the
Afik. It's the time when we eat without an explanation. Right? Arguably, every other time we eat, there's an explanation either right then or pretty close to it. Right? And in fact, as we eat the meal, we go from one explanation, which is leaving Egypt, then we say the motzi, then we get another explanation, which is the temple.
Mm-hmm.
And so the motzi is actually sandwiched, no pun intended, between two different explanations of matzah. And then finally we have Tzafon, which in the Ashkenazi Haggadah has no words at all. I like that better than the Sephardi Haggadah says Zecher LeKarban Pesach, which means remembrance of the Korban Pesach. So we're going to go with the Ashkenazi version for the moment because it makes me happier at the moment. Right? So Tzafon
for the fourth
is the hidden matzah, and it's the Afikomen. And it's the one that's not explained. So here's the challenge here is to figure out if whenever we do matzah things, otherwise we explain it. Why, Dafka, is there no explanation here? Why are there no words? Why are there no words?
Well, one thing that's striking me is that all the way up to this point, all the way up to the meal anyway, has been about incompleteness.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as you pointed out before, you know, the matzah that we make motzi on is the smaller piece, incomplete and spread of affliction and so on. And now we have the bigger piece, which seems to represent wholeness, completion, because it's the bigger piece that was missing that now is being presented.
Right.
So, on one hand, it's like, in terms of the arc of the ritual, it's like we've moved from incomplete and needy to fulfillment, to redemption.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there's the awareness that in terms of the world, we're not in redemption yet. So I don't know, it's like maybe the ritual is kind of affirming wholeness and redemption in action, in eating the thing, but we're not verbally proclaiming it because it's actually just a symbolic action that could, you know, at most, we pertain to the individual, but can't possibly pertain to the world yet, because we're not in Mashiach times.
Mm-hmm. Other thoughts about the silence of the Afikomen?
If you take that and extend that a little bit, then what you have is a very liberational statement. It really says, you cannot do it until the world is ready. You cannot finish this meal until the world is ready to sit down and eat together.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a very strong statement.
Does anyone else want to add some right now? Continue. I mean,
yeah.
This thread will continue.
I mean, I'm kind of viscerally, I'm feeling that, you know, that in the very beginning we're talking about very beginning of the story, we are slaves, and we've broken this matzah, and now this matzah is being you know held for some time, and then all of a sudden it reappears, and like it connects the past up with the present, and there's
for
some
sure.
kind of connection
yeah.
there that I think is quite powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Where
yeah.
Is
that
here?
Yeah. So far.
Did you want to say something, Amiel?
Well, just only that the lack of explanation is that. That which is unfinished, that which is always unknown, that which is always a mystery. You know, mm-hmm. we can know so much, and we will never truly know it. You know, it's mm-hmm. always that part that's open.
Right.
Yes.
I have this other hit on it, which is that, I mean, this bread, the eating of it is a becoming it. Kind of a bread freak. And sharing bread and bread's association with sustenance and earth and body and community, taking all of that in eating the afikoman, which is not the bread of affliction, it's the big half. There's something in doing and becoming in eating this piece here that's feels very whole to me, and I mean it, and doesn't, I don't know that it's about words, so I mean
right.
that may not be sufficient, but right. it's kind of where I'm living with it.
On that note, or in that vein, which also I think picks up some of the other threads, we started out saying we're in the present, now is here, now is slaves, but saying is not the same as being, right? Being in the present here means simply being, not talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing that ties some of the things you said together. Another idea that I have had is that since the afikoman represents redemption, complete redemption, not the middling redemption of you know that ended when the first and second temples were destroyed, that it represents a state of the world that has never been experienced by any human being yet. And therefore, it can't be described in words because it's beyond all language that has existed up till now. And so that's another reason, in my mind, for the silence.
Why do we get the kids, why do we have to redeem it from the kids? I mean, that makes this sound very cheap. It sounds like it's a game now. It takes away any.
Well, this is a this. Why do the kids either hide
wow.
the big half or find the big half? Why are the kids critical to this completion that we're looking for?
Yeah.
I mean, that's actually we can come up easy explanations
yeah.
there, right?
The door by door.
Yeah.
What?
From generation to generation. That's
yeah.
the point.
What do kids represent?
Oh.
This kind
future.
Of future of
mm-hmm.
blessing that we can never.
But they also
I'm thinking of that song, you know, or the Khalil Gibran, you know, you
no
can.
Children,
yeah, that's
no
it.
I
can't remember the line, so I won't try
I
to
mangle
it.
Your children are not your children. They're the sons and the daughters of life.
Fulfilling.
Life's
longing
for
itself.
They come through you, but they are not of you. They're
mm-hmm.
within.
Yeah. What's that?
Well.
Yeah, that makes me think also.
The children also can represent that wholeness because they just sort
mm.
of the innocence of like pre, you know, pre-tree of knowledge kind of thing.
Right.
That the children actually possess the secret of the wholeness that we can that we need to kind of learn their secret.
Mm.
This is a good moment to mention that the discussion of what is the fruit of the tree of knowledge in the Talmud includes several answers. One of them is wheat.
Wheat,
right.
Wheat
right.
is the tree of knowledge.
Wheat.
Yes, it's
yeah.
not a tree,
yeah.
But
yeah, because,
but back in the Garden
sure.
of Eden,
yeah.
it grew as big as a tree, of course. So that's how come it could be called
yeah.
a tree.
The tree
and
of knowledge or the tree of life?
The tree
knowledge.
Of knowledge,
knowledge.
The thing you eat and get exiled from
mm-hmm.
the garden for.
What's the tree of life?
We don't know what fruit it was. If we did, we'd go eat it, and then we'd have to deal with all this.
I think there's something so interesting about the fact that all of the Seder has to do with talking. You know, we call it Pesach, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is actually like a way of saying a speaking mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
It's a pun because
yeah.
it's adding a hey
really?
After the pun. Yes.
Pesach. I mean, it's a stretch, but
it's a stretch.
It goes
but
along
it's
with the Lechem Oni explanation, the bread of answers, the mouth that speaks.
Speaks.
So
yeah.
It's like
yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. It's you know it's one of the teachings about why it is
wow.
that
wow.
the central act of Pesach is telling the story Haggadah to tell
mm-hmm.
the story and you know the story itself is madness. Like you said, it starts four different times and it never finishes itself. And it seems to anyone who actually ever tried to read the story, it's absolute madness. It really
it's like a dream.
Not,
it's like
yeah.
a dream. Dreams are repetitive. say, well, we're trying to tell the, trying to tell ourselves a story, we can't get there.
Right.
It's like a story that everybody at the table is trying to tell, and everybody knows the story, but they won't let the other ones finish.
Sounds very Jewish.
And it's just so interesting that I mean, this is what we end up dealing with as adults, usually, in our own process of liberating ourselves. It's all about talking and figuring out and, you know, processing and dissecting. Mm-hmm. And then the antidote, you might say, like the medicine at the end is this afikomen, that, you know, that we just shut up. And that's actually when it's like finally
redemption. Finally,
redemption.
Stuff this in your mouth. Shut up.
So we should just do that and forget all the rest.
It's
not fun.
In the really Haredi houses where they measure the sheet of matzah to make sure you had enough of it to fulfill the mitzvah, and they have to have a kazayit, which is an olive's worth, but an olive, of course, in the ancient land of Israel was about like this big instead of this big.
It's real silence.
So there's a long silence because they're eating a lot of matzah. Except, of course, the crunch. Yes?
One more question. If stuff is like siyah, what kind of speaking is that? I mean, I'm thinking of the suah that Yitzhak does in the field.
It's related to conversation, but also meditation.
Conversation and meditation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, not reflection, but meditation.
Yeah.
Emptying the mind, that kind of meditation.
What's that?
Emptying the mind, that kind of meditation.
I wouldn't go that far. I don't know what Isaac was doing in the field.
Stream of consciousness meditation, uh-huh, almost. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like the Rebbe Sicha, you know, mm-hmm, it's like when we let our consciousness just go.
And sicha, by the way, siach is usually spelled with a sin, not a sameh.
Yeah.
And so we're dealing with puns here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What is the role of puns in liberation? Is it actually a more interesting question than it sounds like? So, just to recap, because there's more to say about this, but there's also other things I want to cover right now. The structure of the Seder is that matzah means four different things. And if we go with our last explanation of Safun, which I think is a fair one, we're dealing with slavery, right? Liberation, national redemption, and then real, full redemption. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very clear order.
Mm-hmm. Say that again.
Yeah.
Right? We're moving from slavery, obviously, to messianic redemption. So we have, mm-hmm, right, slavery, leaving, liberation, national redemption, the temple, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then world redemption, messianic redemption, real completion of what this promise was or is supposed to be. Yeah. And so the truth is, of course, that matzah means these things all the time, right? Anytime you pick up a matzah, you could quote this verse or that saying.
Mm-hmm.
So what this is what it Seder means. This is what I really want to say. This is the Ikar right here, right? That what it makes it a Seder is that you take the different possible meanings and you put them in an order so that it creates a flow that moves you from one place to another place. And preferably a place that you want to go from to a place you want to go to. Right? That's obviously the critical part of where the Seder goes. So it would be a weird Seder if we started by eating the afikomen, the big half, and we ended by saying, this is the slave bread, now we're slaves. Right.
That's probably closer to the truth.
Right. So that's the thing. So if we take that as an assumption about the Seder, that it's ordered, everything that has an order is ordered with that structure, then we can look at that pattern of, you know, for example, recognizing holiness, kiddush, right, storytelling, eating, celebrating. We could fit it in, we could look at it in reflection of that pattern, right? How does celebrating relate to messianic times? How does eating represent, you know, sort of national familial redemption,
mm-hmm,
right? How does storytelling represent leaving, liberation?
Mm-hmm.
Why is storytelling, I mean, that's the fundamental question. Why is storytelling the way we think we can, mm-hmm, get to liberation?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Why is that the truth? What does that have to do with remembering how we remember the past, how we remember the ancestors? You know, when you tell stories about trials that you've come through, how does that give you a redemption?
It's a psychoanalytic question.
It is. It is. And also, not every telling is redemptive. Some tellings are repressive, right? Or oppressive. So there's a way to tell a story that makes you think, that makes you feel like you're back in Egypt and you get stuck there, right? Like if you've had a really traumatic experience and you haven't really processed it, so anytime you remember it, you don't remember it and remember get escaping, or right, you remember it as if it was still happening. That's what, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder is about. Right? So there's different kinds of remembering that enable us to either get free or keep us stuck.
And how would you say that the telling on Pesach is different, that it is a telling of liberation instead of repeating enslavement? I mean, it's a good question. I think you're right, and I never thought about what the difference is.
It's interesting. In one of the sort of psychotherapeutic techniques for addressing traumatic memory is to retell a story many times. Mm-hmm. I mean, to retell the experience many, many times, and that each time different pieces are recovered and can be kind of dealt with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's interesting because there's also something called a screen memory, where you have one memory, one story that stands in for many similar traumatic experiences. And I think that we could probably make a pretty decent case that that the Exodus story, it, you know, is like a screen memory for many expulsions and escapes and
screen.
It's what it's called, a screen memory. It's this the one story that you do remember and talk about that really stands in for lots of similar experiences.
Why is it called a screen?
I guess because behind it there are many more similar memories, and you're processing this one.
Maybe
that
everything
you do,
gets projected onto
that. That you do have access to this
writing.
One story, and the other ones may still not be accessible to you in terms of your memory or your feeling about it, or your it's not the first time I've thought that the Passover story is also kind of functions like a screen memory for many thousands of years of art history.
So there's more to say here, but I want to go to the four children or the four sons, so we can look at another hidden four.